Hi, this is Mimi Sheraton, author of 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, and you are listening to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Everybody, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Carrie Diamond, editorial director of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food. We have a live show today. DJ Dave is in the booth. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Anything could happen.
That's true. We haven't done a live show in a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So I've got to be on it today.
Are you on it, Carrie?
I'm more or less on it. As you know, we had... As you know, this was our Jubilee weekend, and where were you?
Oh, I was in L.A., sorry.
What were you doing in L.A.?
I was out there with my girlfriend visiting her family for Passover.
Well, I won't rub it in, but you missed the best Jubilee ever.
Oh, wow.
And I know I say that every year, but this this really was the best one. We expanded to 2 days. We had the traditional Jubilee on Saturday, and then we did the Marketplace on Sunday. And, you know, I was going to do a Jubilee recap and talk about my favorite moments and all of that. But honestly, there were so many favorite moments. It would almost be unfair to single out certain ones or certain people or certain brands who are there on Sunday. You can check out all the action on our Instagram. The hashtag is CB Jubilee, and you can see all the people who are there and just... There are a lot of fun pictures, I'll say that much. But the good news is we recorded everything for Radio Cherry Bomb. So as soon as... Dave, how are those interns doing writing up all the show descriptions?
We're cracking the whip as we speak.
As soon as we get to listen to them and write up all the show descriptions, we will have them online probably in the next few weeks. And they're really worth listening to. I mean, there was just so much... wisdom dropped, I will say some names, by people like Chef Barbara Lynch and Margaret Purvis, who runs the Food Bank of New York, Jessica B. Harris, and just on and on. I mean, it was, I always have so much anxiety about Jubilee because it's just such a crazy, busy day, but I came away just feeling completely inspired, walking on air, and like I wanted to take on the world. So hopefully... you'll be able to get a little bit of that from the recordings. What else do we have to talk about? We should thank our sponsors, Kerrygold and Le Cordon Bleu. If you're looking for a little indulgence, check out Kerrygold Irish Cream Liqueur, a premium blend of natural cream, real chocolate, and aged Irish whiskey that was named World's Best Cream Liqueur at the 2016 World Drinks Awards. Enjoy it over ice, in some coffee, or create your own specialty cocktail. I would like some in my latte right now if I had a latte, but I don't have a latte.
Ooh.
No coffee yet. That wasn't a dig at you, Dave.
Yeah, right.
That wasn't a dig at you. Mm-hmm. They say I shouldn't drink coffee before doing the show anyway because you get like too hyper before you do the show. So maybe it's good that there's no caffeine coursing through my system. We also have to thank Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school with locations around the globe, from Paris to London to Ottawa. The schools have a wide array of programs available, from 9-month classical culinary training programs all the way to bachelor and master's degrees. Or how about one of their 3-hour master classes on everything from baking the most delicious macaroons to making that perfect sauce? Visit cordonbleu.edu for more. You know, we also have a great Le Cordon Bleu sweepstakes going on right now. You can visit our website and click on Le Cordon Bleu to learn more about this wonderful trip that you could win to London, Paris, or Ottawa. Let's see what else. We need to talk about the Food Book Fair. A lot of housekeeping, folks, before we get to our guest today, who is sitting across from me very patiently. We are going to be at the Food Book Fair. Oh, Dave, that's what I was looking up when you asked me what I was doing.
Oh.
I didn't have the dates in front of me of the Food Book Fair. The Food Book Fair is this awesome thing that takes place in New York City every May. And this year it's Thursday, May 11th through Sunday, May 14th. And they have just what you can imagine, like lots of book signings and talks and panels. But they also do this great thing called Foodie Articles. And I remember the first year they asked us to be part of it. And I was like, that is the weirdest word ever. But it's Foodie Articles. And it's a marketplace with all your favorite indie publications about food. So Cherry Bomb's there. Not sure who's going to be there this year. They didn't release the list yet. But it's always fun. It's cheap. It's like $5. So, and it takes place 2 days this year. It's Sunday and Saturday and Sunday. So grab a ticket, come see us. We're going to have some great surprises in store for you. And it's, the venue has moved this year. It's at the Ace Hotel in Manhattan. So you can get tickets at foodbookfair.com and make sure you stop by our booth and say hi. We might be debuting our new issue. Hopefully, fingers crossed. So let's talk about today's guest. Jamie Curl is the founder of Quinn, the Portland, Oregon-based candy company with a cult following. Jamie has a new book out. Oh, actually, it'll be out on Tuesday, called Candy is Magic, and it's filled with recipes for her truly magical treats. As Jamie explains in her book, her ultimate goal is to bring a bit of magic to the lives of others by creating a product of which she's proud. A product influenced by her intuition, by true flavor, by quality ingredients, and perhaps by a bit of nostalgia. She also says, "While I don't have any formal training in baking or candy making, two qualities I've never lacked are a deep-rooted, intense love of treats and zero fear of failure." Jamie Curl, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you for having me.
We will definitely go back and talk about that zero fear of failure because I'm fascinated by that. But before we get to that, tell us how Quinn was born.
Let's see. Quinn was, I like you said, I have always loved treats, sweets, treats, all of it. For almost 10 years, I owned a bakery in Portland where Quinn is based, and I baked. I ran the business. We had a couple of locations, 30 employees. I was married. I got pregnant. I had a child. I did all of these things while running this bakery. And then I got to sort of around the end of the ninth year of it, and thought, what are you doing? What do you want to be doing? This was something you really wanted, and it was sort of a dream come true because I started that business from nothing and made it work and grew it. You know, from, honestly, it was me and my best friend. I baked everything. She worked the counter for me, and we just did that for months and months and months until I hired my first employee. And so when I got to the end of the ninth year, I thought, what could you do to make yourself interested in this again? And I made some caramel. And then I thought, oh my God, I'm back. I was invigorated. I felt more creative. I felt more into it and more engaged. So then I started thinking, well, what other kinds of candy could I make in addition to the caramel? So I made lollipops and then gumdrops and did all these things. And Quinn kind of snowballed from that. At first, I didn't have any plans to open a separate business or to do anything other than sort of sell the candy at the counters in our bakery. And then thought, well, now that people buy this and people are interested in it, maybe I could brand it as something separate and sort of do this whole new business. So I did. And
what happened to the bakery?
I sold it. Well, here's what I actually did. And this is like truth that I'm not afraid of anything, but I decided first to just close it because I was so invested in that place. My whole heart and life, it was what I did. I did it with everything that I had. And when I got ready to be done with it, in 20 million years, never, ever, ever thought that any person would ever want to take it on and buy it from me. So it would never have crossed my mind to sell it.
Was it profitable?
Yeah.
And what was the name of the bakery?
Saint Cupcake.
Saint.
Yes. Like Saint Paul.
Okay.
Yes.
And does it still exist under that name?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I closed it. And then 6 months later, someone approached me in Portland and said, why didn't you sell it? And then I thought, oh, I actually don't know why I didn't sell it. That's a great question. Would you like to buy it? And then they said, I would like to buy it. So 6 months after we closed it, because I still had the bakery space, because that's where we were making candy, I ended up selling Saint Cupcake and moving the candy operation out of it and then sort of just focusing on Quinn.
Good for you.
Well, thank you. It was a real adventure.
So that's amazing. You know, a lot of people, I think, are afraid to do that. You know, you don't want to admit something has run its course. I imagine it wasn't an easy decision for you, even though Quinn was taking off on one side.
No, it wasn't. And I think that when you are that invested in something, it can really define you. And if you don't have that thing anymore, what then defines you? And it's the same, I think, for any sort of almost like a personal relationship, a marriage or, you know, like a boyfriend, girlfriend type of thing. When you think of yourself separate of that person, you're like, well, then what am I or who am I if I'm not doing that thing? So there was a lot of personal stuff to get through to be able to move to the point where I was free from it. But once I did it, it was the best feeling ever to understand that I am who I am, sort of regardless of what it is that I'm doing, and to be able to set myself free from worrying about what other people said about it or asking questions and things like that. And then it just, once I mentally was beyond it, it was okay.
So you're talking about what defines people. So what defines you today?
I think that what defines me, definitely my personal relationships. And I have a sort of core group of people who I really care about doing right by them. And I care what they think of me, and I care how I treat them. And that's probably really it. Work is very important to me, and I love my job. But I try really hard to understand that that's what it is. And it actually makes it easier than it was when I had the bakery, because I was like, it was like a whole nother like version of me doing that. And so Quinn is this thing that I love, and I'm obsessed with candy, but I let it be that instead of having it be this thing that sort of is running my whole life and making me do the things that I'm doing. I understand that it is what it is, and it's always going to be there. And no matter, like, you know, I have, thank God, an amazing team around me who helped me run Quinn, which I didn't really have when I did the bakery. So that makes it a ton easier. But work, I try to make it be work. That said, 90% of my time is spent exploring sweets of some sort or eating treats. So I do, there's a lot of sort of work in quotes involved in my personal life, which
that sounds like good work though.
Yeah.
Where did the name Quinn come from?
It is a type of sprinkle. So when I had my bakery, we, you know, made a ton of cakes and cupcakes. And so we used sprinkles all the time, and they're those little flat, they look like confetti or tiny Necco wafers.
Those are called Quins?
Yes.
Who knew?
I did, only because when they came in those giant boxes we bought them in, that's what the label said. So when I was working to figure out what we could call the candy company, I wanted to find something that was a word that sort of related the two jobs together.
But
that's
only
what
you
it was.
But that only you would know the meaning of.
We get so, I, you know, at every event or anything that we do, people assume that it's either my last right. name or my child's name or some kind of name related family name. And it is just a sprinkle.
But then you meet that baker or two that knows what a Quinn is, and
yes.
your baking nerd alert alarm goes off.
Yes.
So, wow, that's wild. Did you ever look into why they're called Quins?
No. No, that's a great question, though.
Yeah,
actually, that would probably help me explain it, since I am asked it so much. That's a good...
I wonder if it's a person or...
I don't know.
We're going to get to the
it's
bottom of
that,
probably
something
Jamie.
From England, because they have so many interesting sort of like nonpareils here, like rainbow nonpareils. They call them hundreds of thousands. And so there's probably some sort of way that I could track it down.
You are clearly now a candy authority.
I think so.
Do you know about candies from like every country now? I mean, yeah, about every country all over the world.
I know about candy. There's like two ways, because I research a lot, or I try to figure out, you know, I don't use a lot of information from outside to make the decisions that I make about candy or about myself actually either. And so a lot of the stuff that I know about candy from around the world is because of stories that people tell me. This reminds me of this that my grandmother made, and she lived in Scotland, and blah, 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 those types of things. And so it just sort of, you know, comes around that way. And some of the collaborations that we do, I do a little bit of research to figure out like how to make something taste like it should, that kind of thing. But for the most part, personally informed by, you know, I know about candies from around the world. But when it comes to Quinn, everything that we make at Quinn comes from something that is me.
That's cool.
I think it is. I mean, I think it is. And I think that that is another sort of way that I try to really hard as a human being to let myself be my guide rather than outside forces. And that is true personally. And it's also true business-wise. I don't go seek information. I don't pull. I don't have people taste things and ask what I should change. I just go for it myself. And it's not to say I don't care what people think, but when making decisions, I am my own sort of best authority.
So you're not out there doing research from other cookbooks or
no.
on Instagram or
no.
anything like that?
No, I try really hard not to.
Yeah. How do you filter out the noise, the digital noise.
I think I just learned to. And, you know, one of the things, I don't believe in competition at all because I just compete with myself. I don't care what other people are making. I don't care about it at all. And I think that I just made the decision to not care. And then it's easy to not care, basically. I have a lot of self-discipline in that way, not in eating at all, but in sort of the way, like philosophy of life. I have a lot of self-discipline to sort of stick to what I want things to be like. Not to say I'm not open to outside things, because I am, but for the most part, I know what I'm doing.
It sounds like you have a business book in you, or a life advice book.
Well,
for other people. Tell me about that fear of failure. Where does that come from?
Fear of no failure?
Fear of no failure.
Well,
yes.
I think
I'm projecting
that,
my fear of failure.
Well,
your,
okay.
Talk about your no fear of failure.
Well, I think that if you start out being afraid, that's your first sort of misstep in anything. And I've always kind of been not risky, but understanding that if I kind of have a plan, that I can step into something and not worry too much about it. And then it's not that I want to like create a backup so that I know that if something goes wrong, I can sort of step back. That's not what it is. But it just, when I was in my 20s, both of my parents died. And at that moment, I mean, you know, after my mom died first and my dad died just a couple years later. And it was right around then that I was like, I'm going to do whatever I want now because this is bullshit and I'm just going to go for it. So that helped me in realizing who I was, the kind of life that I wanted to live, that I didn't want to waste time, that who knows what could happen at any point, that, you know, I was going to become an adult and not know my parents. I would have a kid and my parents would never know that kid. And why screw around? So I just, even now, I just really, it's not that I don't care. It's that what is the worst that can happen? The worst that can happen is you could die. And everything else, whatever, you'll figure it out.
Yeah. We have a good friend, Martha Hoover, a good friend of the magazine. She's a big restaurateur from Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And we have a story on her in the next issue. And Martha says in that story that she's never had a plan B. She's been incredibly successful. She didn't have a restaurant background. She now has 11 different restaurants and I think 4 different concepts with more on the way. She sort of introduced farm-to-table dining in Indianapolis. And I was like, did you always know you'd be successful or did you envision this success? And she said, I've never had a plan B. She said, I've only had a plan A. And I think as soon as you even start to acknowledge a plan B, that's when things can go south.
That's great advice and great information. I mean, exactly. Because I think if you allow yourself that, then you're probably going to take the plan B because often it's easier. And that, I mean, that's the other thing that goes into it is that I'm not afraid to work hard. I've never been afraid of hard work. I got my first job when I was 11, the summer that I turned 12 in Geneva, Ohio at the Geneva Dairy Delight. And I've been working ever since.
Wait, what was the Geneva Dairy Delight?
Ice cream, of course.
Oh.
I worked in ice cream from age of 11 until I graduated from high school.
Get out, really?
Yes. Yes.
11's early.
Oh,
I started working early, but you couldn't work in New York till you were 13.
Pretty sure I wasn't supposed to be working, but I was really determined. And it was the summer. I started probably in June and then I turned 12 in July. So yeah, but I was determined to work.
You have been working around sweet stuff for a very long time.
Forever.
When did your love of candy develop or first manifest itself?
I have always loved candy and like most people, you know, really strong memories associated to food. And so I have all of those. My grandmother who lived in Ohio, her name is Grandma Dot.
That's my grandmother's name. She's not alive anymore.
Mine isn't either.
Grandma Dot. Yep. That's wild.
That is super wild. I loved to, I mean, you know, she was the greatest sweet treat person ever. And every woman in my family has a raging sweet tooth. My mom hid Easter candy around the house so that she could have it sort of throughout the years. My grandmother on my mom's side of the family and her mom made donuts for construction crews and sold them. And then my grandma Dot was like the queen of chocolate. Every Christmas especially, but pretty much year round, would make turtles, chocolate covered nuts, basically anything she could cover in chocolate, she would at least try it. So that when we would go to visit her in Ohio, I just thought this is the most incredible thing ever that she, you know, and to be a kid and to see an adult eating candy when usually the message from an adult is don't eat the candy. But all the women in my life were like, definitely eat the candy. And so that is, I think it's just always been like that.
What were the big candies in your childhood? What do you remember going
candy,
to the store and buying?
I loved chocolate Necco wafers in a roll, like the whole roll of chocolate. I love those. I loved Fun Dip.
Oh, loved Fun Dip.
So much. I love that. And then really any chocolate bar of any sort, from whatchamacallit to 100 grand, anything like that. Loved it. Yeah.
I think I'm a little older than you, but do you remember the Reggie bar?
What is that?
Maybe that was a New York thing. It was to celebrate Reggie Jackson.
Oh, of course.
Baseball
right?
player. Yes. And they had a thing called the Reggie bar. And I need to look this up. I forget what was in the Reggie bar, but I think it was like chocolate and caramel and
crunchy, maybe.
Crunchy things.
Seems
yeah.
like it should be.
But that was a big deal, the Reggie bar, when I was a kid.
I'm going to look it up.
We had a place called the Guyon Market, and it was on Guyon Avenue mm-hmm. where I was growing up, and it was probably a half an hour walk from my house. And you could buy candy for 5 cents, for 25 cents. I mean, can you even do that anymore today?
I don't
think so.
I mean, if you can, I don't know if you'd really want to eat
maybe
it.
Maybe a loose Jolly Rancher or something. But we would walk up there like this little tribe of children with our dimes and our quarters, and you would buy a paper bag full of candy, and oh my god, I couldn't get enough of candy when I was a kid. And the same Fun Dip. It's like, how were we even allowed to eat Fun Dip?
It's,
you might as well just open a child's mouth and just pour the sugar straight
incredible
down.
Incredible to think about it, because and it was in those compartmentalized sleeves with the two sticks mm-hmm. and then the flavors,
right? And you'd have to lick the stick.
Yes and I loved it because I felt like I got more for my money. I was really economical about candy. I would always choose a thing that sort of look at sizes and like, how many ounces is this thing and what is this? And then I would always choose the thing that I could last the longest.
So for those of you who don't know Fun Dip, like Jamie just described, it would sort of come in these three compartments, and it was thin and sort of like in a paper package. But one bit was the dipper,
yeah.
And that was just like a solid block of sugar,
like chalk,
like an oval, right? Very yeah. chalky, sort of like an oval
like
shape,
a popsicle stick shape,
yeah,
but thicker.
And then you had the two different, you had the two Fun Dips, and it literally was just like colored flavored sugar.
Yeah.
And you would lick the stick and dip it into the different flavors. It was sort of like, if you know what a pixie stick is, it was sort of the contents of a pixie stick was in those two, I don't know, pockets, whatever yep. you want to call them. That is a great segue to Quinn candy.
Yes.
Because you made the decision that you would not have any crappy ingredients or artificial anything in your candy.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So now, that said, before we start it, I still do eat candy that contains crappy ingredients because I want to know about it. But when I started Quinn, that's when I had my bakery, and the ingredients that I had around were real food ingredients, because that's what we used to bake with. We had whole fruit around, you know, real butter, cream, all of those things. And so when I started making the candy, I didn't research what you make candy with. I just thought, I'll teach myself how to make candy with the things that I have around here. So that's how it started. And it would never cross my mind to make candy any other way, even though it's a lot faster and a lot cheaper to make it with basically like fake stuff. Faster because there's, when you use sort of fake ingredients, your outcomes are more assured. Whereas when you use whole food or real ingredients like we use, sometimes you don't exactly know. There are lots of sort of ifs. So, and it just hasn't, I just would not do it any other way. And then once you eat the candy that we make, you get it. Even, I mean, you know, there's a reason it costs what it does, because we use super premium ingredients. We don't use anything crazy. And the things that we use the best you can possibly get. So, you know, it's not a loose Jolly Rancher that's 5 cents. It costs, you know, a lot more than that. But in my opinion, it's totally worth it, because it's this completely different experience in candy.
Can you walk us through some of your bestsellers and
yes.
what's in them?
Yes, I can. So we make a candy called Dreams Come Chew, which is sort of fruity, chewy candy that contains sugar and butter and glucose, which is, glucose is sort of a crystal blocker, I would say. So when you make candy,
crystal blocker.
Yeah, if you make candy and you just melt sugar and then you the sugar cools down, then it just recrystallizes. So when you bite the candy, it has sort of a crystallized texture to it. So if you add a little bit of glucose, which kind of gets in the way of the sugar crystals and interrupts that recrystallization, it keeps it nice and smooth, and the texture is exactly what you want it to be. So we use a glucose that we get from France that is non-GMO and is derived from the potato instead of corn. And so it's in Dreams Come True, butter, glucose, sugar.
French glucose, I think you should say
French,
that.
French, ooh la
la. Makes it sound so
exactly.
fancy.
Exactly, it's very French. And then some color and flavor. The color and flavor derived from real fruit and from vegetables like beets, and then there's turmeric in it. So five ingredients in the Dreams Come True versus, you know, a Starburst is kind of the closest candy that people compare that to. And those Starburst has between 15 to 20 ingredients in it.
I'm looking at the flavors right now. You have chocolate and mint.
Yes.
Dreams Come True. Chocolate, cinnamon milk. Well, that sounds yummy. What's cinnamon milk?
Did you ever put an atomic fireball into a glass of milk when you were a kid to make your milk pink?
But
that's what it tastes like.
That sounds great. I never did that. Cherry and tangerine,
yes.
Strawberry and lime, and assortment.
Yes.
That's not
so
a flavor.
The assorted, it's a box of sort of all the flavors. There's a pineapple, coconut, lime, lemon, cherry, strawberry, and tangerine.
Yum. And how about your lollipops? People love your lollipops.
They do because they're so beautiful. So if you can visualize it, you hold it up to the light and you can see the skins of a cherry or the seeds from a strawberry or the seeds from a blackberry. So those lollipops we make basically like you do hard candy. You put water, sugar, and a little glucose in a pot and cook it. And then we use fruit that we get from Oregon that we bring into our kitchen and roast it and puree it. And then we use that fruit. We don't strain it. We don't do anything. We leave all the natural stuff in it, and we put it in to color and flavor the candy. So if you, I mean, they're totally beautiful.
They're so beautiful. They look like stained glass.
That's what I love about it. And if you know, if you don't put it on a stick, because you can make it, and this is in the book too, you can basically do anything you want once you make a pot of hard candy. You can pour it out into a tray and break it into pieces. You can put it on sticks to make a lollipop. You can pour it into a mold, however you want to do it. You can make stained glass windows for your gingerbread house, all sorts of stuff. But that's what I love, is that it's just so beautiful. And my enthusiasm for how gorgeous it is never fades. When I'm at work and we're making, 30,000 lollipops, I'm still like, they're the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And it's just a blackberry lollipop.
And you have traditional flavors, like you just said, blackberry,
yeah.
You have cherry, raspberry, strawberry, but you also have some fun flavors.
Yes.
You have coffee.
Yes.
You have chai tea.
Yes.
You have Sniffle Slayer. Tell us
the
about
Sniffle
that one.
Sniffle Slayer is sort of a cold alleviator. It has ginger, cayenne, lemon, honey. So all the things you would kind of drink in sort of a hot tea situation when you have a cold, in lollipop form.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Thank you.
How'd you come up with that idea?
It was, everybody was sick at work, and it was at the beginning of Quinn, and everyone was really sick, and everybody was drinking in the break room some kind of elixir in that way, and I thought, this would make such a great candy. I wonder if we could make it work. So it has some apple cider in it, and then it's basically like you would make a normal hard candy where you just start out with water and sugar and glucose, but there is, we put apple cider in it and then the lemon juice, and then it's pretty great.
Very cool.
Thank you.
And then you have Pinot Gris lollipops.
Yes.
And Pinot Noir lollipops.
Yes. So we make,
can you get drunk?
No, because we cook all the lollipops.
I'm kidding.
So many people ask me that though.
So it would have to be a giant lollipop.
So we begin with the wine. With wine, but we reduce the wine down till it's sort of syrupy. So that cooks a lot of the alcohol out. And then the alcohol also is recooked in the actual candy recipe. So by that time, there's no booze left in it, which leaves us with an issue of how do we bring the boozy flavors back into it so it actually does taste like wine? Because if you have a rosé or a Pinot Noir lollipop that doesn't taste like booze, then it just tastes like fruit, essentially, because those wines are so fruity. So I sort of reverse engineered how to do it. And basically, the recipes are in the book for all of these. You can add some sort of yeasty flavors back in, either using vinegar or actually, you know, like instant yeast, so that when you eat the lollipop, you get all those fruity flavors from the wine, but then you also have that hint of like booziness. So it does really taste like alcohol.
Well, since you referenced the book, we are going to take a break and hear from our sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about this magical cookbook, Candy is Magic, and go through some of the recipes that are inside. We'll be right back. spoil yourself with Kerrygold Irish Cream Liqueur. This delicious grown-up treat is a perfectly balanced blend of three ingredients: natural Irish cream from grass-fed cows, velvety rich real chocolate, and whiskey that has been distilled and matured in Ireland for at least 3 years. Try it straight over ice, channel your inner mixologist and create your own specialty cocktail, or blend it with vanilla ice cream for the best adult milkshake you've ever had. Indulge in the smooth delight that is Kerrygold Irish Cream Liqueur. Le Cordon Bleu, the renowned culinary school, was founded in Paris 122 years ago by a young journalist named Mademoiselle de Stael. In 1895, she launched the first weekly culinary magazine called La Cuisinière Le Cordon Bleu. She invited subscribers to take part in free cooking lessons with the chefs featured in her magazine, and from there, the school was born. In the years since, Le Cordon Bleu's world-class instructors have taught French classical culinary techniques to everyone from home enthusiasts to food world legends. If you've ever dreamed of attending culinary school, maybe it's time to start living that dream. Check out one of Le Cordon Bleu's 35 locations around the world, or add a short vacation or weekend program at one of its schools to your next vacation. Visit cordonbleu.edu for course descriptions, dates, online registration, and to discover which school is best for you. It's all possible at Le Cordon Bleu. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. We are here with Jamie Curl from Quinn Candy, all the way from Portland. We need to talk about Portland. We need to talk about your cookbook. So let's talk about this book. It's out on Tuesday.
It is.
It's called Candy is Magic. And you have it's an all-girl team, it looks
all
like,
girl.
That worked on the...
You are 100% correct.
On the book. Tell us about your team.
My lady team is... I love these people dearly. A lot of them I have known forever. The photographer of the book, I first met her. She took photos of my son at his first birthday, and he's now 10.
That would be Maggie Kirkland?
Yes. She's incredible, and she is... The thing that I love about her the most is that she would never say no to any of my ideas, even if they are like next to impossible, or we have to build a 4-foot by 4-foot light table to make it possible. Whatever it is, she's like, that sounds great. We can figure out a way to do it. And then the illustrator, her name is Michelle Ott, and she did all the illustrations in the book. And she's the second person I hired at my bakery when I had my bakery. So I've known her for a long time also. She does all of the illustrations for Blue Bottle Coffee. She is in the Bay Area. She's a great lady also. And then down to sort of, you know, I had a friend of mine who I actually moved to Portland with. Her name is Stephanie Sheldon. And she has a store in Portland, is really good at arranging things. And so I didn't really want the book to look too foodie. So I had her come to help me figure out how we should style the shots because she's so good at like spatial stuff. And then my, you know, college roommate designed the cover of the book, did the end page design, that's that pattern in there, and did a couple of designs throughout the book. And then, you know, I worked with 10 Speed Press. Jenny Wapner is my editor, and she is incredible and gave me so much freedom to be able to do what I wanted to do with the book and hire the people that I wanted to be able to hire to work on it with me. And Ashley Lima, also at 10 Speed, helped so much because she did the rest of the design throughout the book that my friend Kristen didn't do. So together, it was like a total girl power. It
takes a village, huh?
Yes, exactly.
To do one of these cookbooks.
Yes.
I love Maggie's pictures of all the hard candies lit from behind.
Behind.
They just look so... I mean, I was going to say they look so magical. That's why the book is titled Candy is Magic. And you know what's funny? I just randomly opened to a page and it says surprise inside lollipops with chewy centers. And I don't know if you remember, but that's how we came to know about you. Because I think we were, I don't know, crying on social media or something about we were on deadline and we were working so hard. And next thing we know, we get this package from you.
Yeah.
We didn't even know you. And it was filled with lollipops. And I think one of the lollipops, oh no, you did that for our first Jubilee.
We did.
You sent us a care package, which was so wonderful because you didn't know us from anybody. And then you did a special lollipop for us for Jubilee. And it was, it had a like cherry scent, like chewy cherry chocolate center.
Yes. The hard candy was cherry and the center was chocolate.
It was so good.
Thank you.
Oh my God. I think I personally ate all of those.
That's when we don't have those. We don't sell those right now. We kind of phase in and out of things we're doing, and those are like total weakness for me. Cannot eat them when they're around.
So yeah. Good. But
thank
that was
you.
Really, really sweet of you.
Oh, it was our pleasure. Always is.
To help out some strangers with sweet tooths on the, or sweet teeth. I guess you would
sweet
call it a
teeth?
Sweet tooth.
Sweet
that doesn't
tooths.
Have the same ring. On the other side of the country. So this cookbook.
Yes.
Can anybody, do you need a lot of stuff?
No,
to
you
make
don't
candy?
Need,
I'm,
no.
I'm
I
not,
mean,
I've never made candy.
You could outfit your kitchen with a ton of stuff if you wanted to, but if you have a nonstick mat and a spouted cup, a measuring cup, like a Pyrex, then you could make, you know, a thermometer would be handy to make some of the hard candy, but the recipe for caramel in there, you make it by sight. You don't need a thermometer to do it. You can pour the candy after it's made into a buttered 9x13 pan, which almost everybody has. Lollipops you can make if you have a nonstick mat. You just set your lollipop sticks on it, put the hot candy into the measuring cup, and pour it over the top of the stick, and that sets up.
Those might look a little freeform, but
we used to make all
of
our
right?
Yeah, we used to make all the lollipops that way. We didn't use molds to make them perfectly round, and I just loved the way some of them turn out, and then you can sort of start to look at it and see there's a heart in that one, or that one looks like a pumpkin or whatever it is, but it just
that's when you know you spent too much time in the kitchen.
Yes.
I see God in the lollipop.
There's Mary. Yeah.
Let's call the National Enquirer. I'm going to read you some of the chapter titles just so everybody has a sense of what's in this book. So there's a chapter on roasted fruit purees, infused creams, syrups and reductions, magic dusts. Tell us what I saw you have chocolate magic dust for sale on
favorite,
your site.
Yeah, it's my favorite ingredient to do anything with because
it's not like some weird edible body dust, is it? Or I guess it could be.
Anything could be, right? I guess. But it's essentially hot chocolate mix is the best way to say it. And that's how it started. As something that we could like sell and, or, you know, yeah, sell as sort of a hot chocolate mix. So once I got the hot chocolate down, then I started realizing, well, you could heat up the milk, mix the powder in, and then you could chill it. And then you have like the world's most delicious chocolate milk on your hands. And then I thought, well, what else? If it's just like powder, what could we do with it? So then I realized you could make pancakes and waffles with it. You just substitute out some of the sugar and add them dust in, and then you've got this, you know, chocolate pancakes, chocolate waffles. And then I made a cake with it, and it worked. And I made brownies with it, and that worked. Chocolate sauce, hot fudge, ice cream, all of these things possible with this one chocolate magic dust.
Mm. I was obsessed with chocolate milk as a kid.
I still am obsessed with chocolate milk.
Hershey
I drink
syrup,
chocolate milk,
Quick,
yeah.
Oh. All that stuff.
It's so delicious. It's really... one of the, like, to me, life's greatest pleasures is a glass of chocolate milk.
You have recipes for easy ice creams, lollipops, hard candy, caramels, your dream come chews, marshmallows, gumdrops, and then you've even got a section called Beyond Candy. I saw a really fun recipe in here for rosé lollipops.
Yes, that's super fun.
That sounds great.
They're really popular. They're like everybody's favorite like summertime thing. You know how rosé is, and so they're delicious and they taste just. I mean, if you drink the wine that you're going to make the candy with, and can pick out some fruit notes, and then sort of adjust your own recipe so that it mimics those same notes. It's delicious.
Do you know our friends from Yes Way Rosé?
We do. We have sent them some rosé lollipops. Yes,
that would be fun. They have their summer water rosé.
Yeah, they do.
Coming out soon. I think it's out now.
Should be.
Yeah.
Seems
they.
Like it.
I love that brand.
It's yeah.
All around. So much
great.
Fun.
Yes.
Speaking of collaborations, let's jump over to collaborations because you said you do a lot of them.
We do. We have, you know, all the wine candy that we make, we work with Union Wine, which is a winery in Oregon, and they make rosé in a can and sparkling wine in a can and Pinot Noir in a can.
So
you definitely have.
I saw that in the airport.
Yeah, I'm sure.
In Seattle or Portland
probably.
Or something. I flew in and I was like, oh my God, they have wine in a can.
Yes. Yes, they do. So we use their wine to make candy with, and that has been a longstanding, great partnership for us. And beyond the candy that we make with their wine, I made cotton candy with their Pinot Noir, and I have made caramel corn with a Riesling of theirs. So it's just stuff that I just work at to figure out.
Caramel corn with their Riesling.
Yes. So you just make a Riesling caramel, essentially, and then make caramel corn with it. Yeah. And then the cotton candy, you sort of make a Pinot Noir sugar, essentially, that tastes like the Pinot Noir, and then spin it in the cotton candy machine, and then you have this cotton candy that tastes like wine.
That's fun.
Yeah, super fun.
Tastes like wine?
Yes.
Wow.
It's one of those things when you see the cotton candy and you definitely have one expectation of what it's going to taste like, and then you put it in your mouth and you're like, what is this? And it is wine. So that has their great partnership. And then we work with Smith Tea a lot also. We make two caramels with their tea right now, bergamot and chai tea that is smoked, which is one of my favorite candies that we make, smoked chai caramel. And we are now working with their tea that they call Meadow, and it's like a chamomile tea, but we're using the tea in a caramel that we're making for Farm Girl Flowers, which is that floral operation in San Francisco, and they make those gorgeous bouquets that are wrapped in burlap, and they ship them everywhere. So for Mother's Day, we're doing this delicious lemon myrtle and chamomile caramel for them.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it's great. I got to develop the candy sort of however I wanted, and I wanted something as flowery as we could get it without it being like lavender or rose, because I'm not drawn to those as flavors, but chamomile and things like that I can totally get behind. So the lemon myrtle is one of the ingredients in the Meadow tea, actually. And so it was a great bright note. So we just highlighted that and then made the candy.
When is that collab available?
It's available. We just shipped all the candy to them. So I think if you're placing your Mother's Day orders, you'll be able to get it on their website.
Ooh, fun.
Yeah.
And who else? Anybody else from the Portland scene you work with?
We have worked with various places like Woodblock Chocolate, which we have made a lot of candy with their chocolate. Right now, it's mostly Union Wine, Water Avenue Coffee. We in Stumptown, of course, we make Stumptown gumdrops, and we have coffee gumdrops are really fun. There's actually a recipe for those in the book. And then Water Avenue Coffee, another coffee roaster in Portland, that we make lollipops with their coffee.
Yeah. I was saying earlier before we got on air that we had Kim Malik from Salt and Straw.
Yes.
And you said they sell your Salt and Straw ice cream, and they sell your candy at their shops?
Yes, they do, which
that's
is
so much fun.
It is really fun. It's a great partnership for us. And, you know, they're, you know, obviously everywhere and are opening, I don't know,
in San Francisco.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Lots of places. And so it's great for them. And I think they're opening in Seattle also.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just read that, I think. So it's great, and they are super supportive of what we do, and that they sell a lot of candy, actually, which is awesome for us.
Is the Portland scene pretty collaborative?
I think that it is. Depending upon how you want to be involved, I guess. I mean, and that is the same anywhere on Earth, I guess. But it is definitely there's a ton of people making food, whether it's a restaurant or an artisan product, you know, very much like Brooklyn, I guess I would say. And so it's a, you know, an arm's reach to find somebody who's trying to make something that is, yeah, it's just, you know, everybody is out there doing it. And so that, I think, is something that you can either get real caught up in, or you can kind of do like head down and focus and like work on your own deal and try to get it out there, or you can kind of focus locally. So it just depends upon the way you want to do it.
I need to get out to Portland. I haven't been there in a really, really, really long time.
It's a good place to live. It's a good place to live. It's a super easy place to raise a kid, which is, you know, one of the like best reasons to be there for me, but it is an interesting place.
How did you wind up in Portland?
I'm from Ohio, and when I was getting ready to graduate from college, I was home for the weekend with my best friend, Stephanie, and we were sitting at her mom and dad's kitchen table, and the local paper was there, and it said, there was a travel article, and it said, Portland, Oregon, a city raised on coffee, beer, and books. And I thought, we should go to this place. So we did. She was nice enough to drive. I went to travel for the summer and was in England and France and ended up flying from London to San Francisco. And she drove all of our stuff to San Francisco. We met in San Francisco and stayed at her aunt's house for a couple of days, and then drove up to Portland, stayed at a Motel 6 for a week, found an apartment, found jobs, and have been there for 20 years.
That's a great story.
It's so crazy. And it was, you know, we moved way before Portland was Portland. There was no food scene. Entire neighborhoods that are completely developed now didn't exist then. It was a totally different place, but perfect for two Ohio girls, you know, moving to a big city.
And you had said it's a great place to have a family. You have a son.
I do. Theo.
The book is dedicated to Theo.
It is. Yeah. He is. I've never met anyone like him. And I'm not just saying that because I'm his mom. I'm going to start crying at this part. He is just a superb human being. And the way that he looks at the world and the way that he has his own way to do things. He's driven from the inside to do the things that he wants to do. He's really involved in the performing arts. He loves music, acting, dancing, all of that. And from day one has loved it and has been driven to be involved in it and to audition for things and to go to rehearsals. He's busy every day of the week. I don't push him to do any of it. He just has he's his own deal. And he's the most confident person I've ever met. He doesn't care what anybody says.
Sounds like he gets some of that from you.
I would love to think so, but I don't preach it to him. I hope is happening is that he's watching me and learning. Because I don't sit him down and say, like, you need to be proud of who you are and you don't have to worry about what anybody says. He just lives it. He's a great guy.
Aw.
Yeah, thank you.
Does he hang out at the office?
Yes.
Does he know all about the candy operation?
He does know all about it, and he has a lot of ideas and likes to pitch in his ideas. But when he comes to Quinn, he generally is in charge of entertainment, and he will sing and dance for everyone or will, you know, he wants to operate sort of like a bag sealer or like do things like that. And he'll put candy in bags and, you know, stuff like that. So sometimes if we come to work, I can just put him down in the packaging area and go up to my office and do my stuff. And then 3 hours later, come to find him. And he's just doing what somebody told him to do down there. So he's pretty helpful, actually.
Oh, he sounds like a great kid.
He is. He's a great guy.
Now, you're a single mom.
Yes.
How do you handle having your own business, having a child, all of that?
If I had a regular job, I think it would actually be a lot harder because of my schedule. So the nice thing about having Quinn and having my own business is I can kind of work when I need to, which is all the time, but it's not this sort of like I need to be in from 8:30 to 5 every day. So I'm able to leave work to go pick him up, or I'm able to drop him off at a rehearsal. I bring my laptop. I do the rest of my work while he's in his rehearsal or whatever it is. So it's a total insane juggling act. And I just have a calendar and I just write everything down and I just make sure I'm where I'm supposed to be. And then, you know, if I have to stay up until after he goes to bed till midnight to finish work, then I just do it and it just works. And, you know, I don't think there's anything that I don't think balance exists for any person, single mom, you know, whatever it is. I just don't think it's a real thing to strive for. You just kind of each person has to figure out their own way. And thank God, my kid is super agreeable and, you know, doesn't fight like having to go places or do, you know, be places on time. He just gets that we have to get going. So that part makes it really easy.
How do you decide how much candy he's allowed to have?
He's the best about it. This is a question people ask me all the time because, it's true. I have multiple candy dishes around the house. I have a pantry that is filled with all kinds of candy. If I have gone to sort of...
Oh, my God, you're the most awesome mom.
Oh, man. If I've gone to sort of like, you know, any sort of store that I've never been to before and they have candy, I always buy it. So we have a ton of stuff. And then not including like the various like 8 or 10 bags of chocolate chips or, you know, whatever type of chocolate I have around to bake with. So there's stuff around all the time. He asks first before ever eating candy or any sweet. And sometimes he'll, you know, say, after dinner, can I have a chocolate egg or, you know, whatever it is. He never sneaks it, always asks. And I think it's because it's always been around and it's never been this forbidden thing. So it's not as if he goes to a friend's house who's allowed to eat junk and then like vacuums it all up. He knows it's not fleeting and it's not going away. So he knows he doesn't have to worry about whether or not he's going to get it. So he just is really chill about it.
You just reminded me of a story. When I was a kid, I'm one of five, and
oh
my sister was having a sleepover party, and one of her girlfriends was not allowed to have anything with sugar. And my mom heard some noise at like 2 a.m. and went down to the kitchen, and there was her friend just like, I think she was like scarfing down the birthday cake or something because this poor kid
right.
had just been deprived.
And that's what I
for
think
so
that
long
it
and
is.
Just kind of short circuited in her little brain and decided to eat all the birthday cake.
Knowing that the cake was there, how could you not?
This weekend is Easter.
Yes.
Which is a serious religious holiday, but for those who love treats, it's also a major candy holiday. Yes. What does Quinn do for Easter?
This year we did some bunny packaging. In the past, we've done special bunny molds and things like that. And this year we did a whole new line of packaging that has all these bunnies on it. So we combined some of our favorite flavors of candy into new combinations so that there's Dreams Come True that are in multiple flavors that are in a box together, and then gumdrops sort of the same way, so that it makes it sort of this sort of special packaging wise, but our tried and true favorites sort of in new ways. And Easter is so crazy. I mean, all my memories of Easter have nothing to do with any sort of religion, have to do with getting an Easter basket and then my mom saying, whatever you want to do with it. You can eat it all in 10 minutes if you'd like, whatever you want. And so as a kid, like, I was like, I love Easter because it's whatever you want. And then, you know, usually what my sister and I would think, you know, it'd be so fun if we watch Charlie and the Chocolate Factory while we have these Easter baskets, because then we're basically like the kids in the movie being able to do whatever they want. So we do sell, you know, people ask us about Halloween a lot also. And, you know, we don't make Halloween candy, but Easter is perfect because it's sort of special and it goes nicely in an Easter basket, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I loved my Easter basket too. Oh. I always had a thing for white chocolate, which purists kind of gag over, but I loved my white chocolate. I still kind of do. And Dave is editorializing from the studio. All right. I don't know why I like white chocolate. I liked it as a kid.
So
I still kind of like
it. It's so sweet and delicious.
But I always got my white chocolate Easter bunny.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That made me so happy. And my mom would hide eggs and we would go look for the eggs. It was great. You don't really get into chocolate that
much.
No,
we don't make chocolate at all at Quinn. And chocolate cake and chocolate sauce and chocolate ice cream, yes, but we don't make any bonbons or truffles or anything like that. We just make candy.
Is it because chocolate is such a serious specialty unto itself that you haven't veered off into that
territory?
Oh, that's
definitely true. And the type of candy that we make is also sort of its own specialty. It's just not, I'm not interested in it. And I think that when I set out to do candy, I that wasn't what I was interested in figuring out. And so many people have figured it out, but not a lot of people have figured out a gumdrop that contains fruit that was grown, you know, 40 minutes from where you're making the candy. So that sort of was more interesting to me. But I love to eat chocolate.
Now, we could probably devote an entire show to this, but let's talk for a minute about edibles.
Okay.
Is marijuana usage legal in Portland for recreational use?
Yes, it is.
Have you thought about going into the edibles category?
I get asked this question, not joking, every single day.
Wow. I'm glad I came up with an original
question
for you.
Not like that, but from people who want us to do it for them. Not like a person on the street saying, have you ever thought about it or interested, but we get like serious inquiries about co-packing or producing for someone else under a different label. And I'm not there. I'm not interested in it at all. And I know that that's a stupid answer because there's so much money to be made in it. But I'm not driven by
it's not
that.
You. That's
no.
Cool. That's how you've gotten where you are. Sounds like you've done what felt right.
Yeah. Yes. Great way to say it. Yeah.
On that note, we are going to end Radio Cherry Bomb for today. Jamie, it was so much fun talking to you. And I really just have to thank you. It was so nice to get that package in the mail all those years ago. And it was really touching.
Well, thank you.
You know, not everybody does stuff like that, and we didn't know each other, and I just thought it was great.
And now you get it. I mean, you understand it. It's that I think that to be able to give someone something that you've made or even something that you've bought that's a surprise to let them know you're thinking about them or that even that they're a tiny bit special or that you admire them, that kind of thing, it's magic.
Do you have some book signings coming up?
Yes.
Do you want to plug any of them? I didn't tell you to have that information at your fingertips, but any cities you're going to where your fans can find you?
I'll be in Portland. I'm going to speak at Creative Mornings on April 28th, and I'll be at Powell's Books on April 30th. And then I will be in LA and San Francisco in May, and I'm going to teach a lollipop class and do a book signing at Heath Ceramics in May.
Oh, we love Heath Ceramics.
Oh, I love them too so much. And then I'm going to do a couple of talks at Google while I'm there. And then in LA, I'll be at the Bakery Friends and Family and a couple of other LA stops. But those things, I have none of that committed to memory.
Will all your stops be on your website?
Yeah.
Can people look
Quinn
them
Candy.
Up? Fantastic.
Yes.
Okay, quinncandy.com.
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, Jamie Curl, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
If you love candy or just want to look at a beautiful cookbook with beautiful photos, Candy is Magic will be out on Tuesday.
Yes.
That's it for today's show. Radio Cherry Bomb was engineered by the one and only Dave Tatasciore. Thank you to our sponsors for making this season of Radio Cherry Bomb possible. Be sure to have Kerrygold Irish Cream Liqueur on hand for all your entertaining needs. And visit cordonbleu.edu to learn about the variety of culinary classes offered at the legendary Le Cordon Bleu's many locations around the world. Be sure to check out our Le Cordon Bleu sweepstakes on cherrybomb.com. We also have the San Pellegrino Young Chef competition information there, so check that out if you know any amazing young chefs you want to tell them about it. We are doing a sale of issue number 6 if you go to our website. We're calling it our sad sale. It's because Girls ends on Sunday. And Lena Dunham and Jenny Connor are on the cover of issue number 6, and we're sad. It's like a friend is going away, and we're not sure when she's going to come back. Jamie looks like she has something to say. Go ahead.
It is sad.
It is sad.
Yeah, it's the truth. That's sad sale is sad, though.
It is a sad sale. We were like, what do we call this? And we're like, we are putting this magazine on sale for $10 because we're sad. So anyway, big thanks to Lena and Jenny. We had so much fun working with them on that issue. And Girls has just been such a tremendous show. Whatever age you are, I mean, I'm not the age of the characters, and I still feel like I just got so much from that show. So a big thanks to the two of them for putting that out into the universe and just being with us for so many years. We're going to miss you.
True.
All right, everybody. That's it. Thank you for listening. You're the bomb.
Hi, I'm Jenny Dundas, and I'm co-founder and CEO of Blue Marble Ice Cream, maker of the most delicious, certified organic, GMO-free ice cream in the world. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Nicole Bernard Dawes, co-founder and CEO of Late July Organic Snacks. Because Nicole was ahead of the curve when she started a certified organic snack company, and even though the rest of the world is catching up, her snacks are still the best.